You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, January 18th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the show, to talk about the Soapageddon, just coined that myself, ladies and gentlemen. Garland Gilchrist, National Campaign Director for MoveOn.org. If you're wondering why some of your favorite websites today are blacked out, he will explain. We've sort of explained this over the months, I have to say. We've been covering SOPA now, I think, since early November when we had Tim Carr on. But be that as it may, we'll be talking to Garland Gilchrist. Today is a big pushback, fascinating day, because it's not only the typical, and I don't mean to be disparaging in any way, but the usual suspects in terms of protesting this thing. We're seeing non-political tech companies get involved. More on that in just a moment. And then later in the program, Tina Dupuy from Crooks and Liars, who is also down in D.C. for Occupy Congress. We'll talk to Jeff Smith again tomorrow. Ongoing coverage of Occupy movement. And this late-breaking news. It appears that the State Department is about to announce that it will not be going ahead and signing off on the Keystone XL pipeline. You'll remember that in exchange for allowing our government to continue, the Republicans forced the State Department or bargained for a 60-day timeline for the State Department to approve the Keystone Pipeline. Now, of course, from the beginning, this was virtually impossible because the State Department had already initiated another round of environmental impact and studies as to the Keystone Pipeline. Basically, they had found that the first route cutting through the United States of America was not operable, and they were trying to determine a new route for the pipeline to follow, but it was going to take more than 60 days. So this was basically just for the Republicans to get some type of political hay. I think the State Department decided, well, the best day to do that would be when all the websites are blacked out, so they won't be able to make much political hay off it. So kudos to them. That's pretty funny. Of course, those people on Fox, they don't even know websites. I just go to RushLimbaugh.com. I don't think he's signing off on anything. So that's that late-breaking news. And let's go. I mean, briefly, we're going to take a break in just a moment. But understand that what's happening with the SOPA and IP. Now, the quick dirty explanation of what SOPA is. It's a law in Congress that has been pushed by both Republicans and Democrats to essentially go after foreign websites that are supposedly infringing upon the copyrights of Hollywood. And but it's the way they were going about it and the implications for the architecture of the internet and the implications for a lot of content sharing outfits like Twitter. It's where I share our content and other people's content, or Facebook or YouTube or Reddit or Tumblr. It would cause those outfits, which are essentially conduits, to police their sites in a way that would basically make it impossible for them to operate. But let's take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Garland Gilchrist. Give us a sense of what the state of play this legislation is, and a sense of just sort of how unprecedented it is to see all these different entities strike back against the government and these other corporations as the internet, as opposed to some type of advocacy group. And here is an anti-SOPA song that we'll be playing throughout the day.
Behalf. Then along came SOPA PEEPA, the internet's very own Grim Reaper. Users could not edit Ars Technica and Reddit, Tumblr, Gawker, Hacker News, and Something Awful sang the blues, and every login was refused. The day the lolcats died. Why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies. Can you write a decent...
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Garland Gilchrist. He is the National Campaign Director for MoveOn.org. Welcome to the program, Garland.
Happy to be here, Sam.
So, Garland, tell me just what MoveOn's doing, but let's talk about sort of the unprecedented nature of the pushback on this SOPA and PIPA, are the acronyms for this legislation in the Senate and in the House. The coordination, or maybe not necessarily coordination, but the sort of unified pushback by groups that are not terribly political.
Absolutely. You can call it really just parallel outrage to internet censorship. That's really what it is. Don't think about it as SOPA and PIPA. Think about it as people standing up and saying they hate internet censorship and they want to stop it. I mean, we've never really seen activism like this online before. I mean, MoveOn.org has never blacked out its website in protest to anything, and we're not the first. Wikipedia has never done this. Google's never taken political action in protest. So many sites are really breaking new ground in activism, and that's because this internet censorship legislation is so terrible.
Yeah, let's tell me about the state of play of this. I know that the brewing pushback over the weekend caused the White House to come out and say they didn't like a certain aspect of the bill. Maybe you can walk us through that a little bit and give us a sense of what the state of play is right now with the bills.
Sure. Well, the most important thing to think about going forward is that the Senate is still scheduled to vote on the bill, the PIPA bill in the Senate, on January 24th, the same day as the State of the Union. So really this activism today is all about making calls and contacting your senators to let them know how you want them to vote or how you want them to reject internet censorship. But yes, the White House came out with a pretty strong statement saying that they did not endorse internet censorship and they did not endorse the bills as written. You've had co-sponsors from this bill dropping like flies earlier today. Senator Marco Rubio, who was an original co-sponsor, a Republican, dropped his support. Late last week, Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland, an original co-sponsor, dropped his support. You've got senators from both parties, you know, saying that they're hearing from their constituents, hearing from people saying they don't want internet censorship, and they're, you know, running from this like a house on fire.
Well, that's fantastic. And take us through what the real problems are with this bill. I mean, I understand that in a blanket sense, we're talking about some form of internet censorship. But what do you say to those people who see this as just basically thievery that's going on online?
Well, let me give you an example to make it clear actually what this bill does and why it's so bad. Let's say you have a blog or you have like the open thread or forum on the Majority Report website, and a commenter, a user, someone participating in the forum just decides to link to another website. If that website that they link to has even allegedly infringing content, that could put you, the owner of the Majority Report forum, in danger, and the person that linked also in danger of your website getting shut down. This is really just like throw the baby out with the bathwater. If we even think someone could potentially be infringing on copyright, big media companies and their lobbyists can then compel the Department of Justice to take action to get that site shut down, to get that site delisted from search engines, or to even get that site to stop being able to process payments. I mean, these things are really, really awful. And so for all the people that are representing the very small minority that are supporting this bill, I mean, you have the people that made a movie like Arthur, and they thought it was going to be a huge, you know, summer blockbuster, and obviously it wasn't. And so they got really mad about that and decided to blame piracy for the reason that that movie flopped.
Wait one second. Are you telling me the remake of Arthur was not a huge hit?
I mean, you know, me and all my friends might have went to see it, but no one else on the planet did. And they wanted to blame piracy for that. I mean, this gives you a sense of the people who are trying to push this bill don't want to innovate in terms of business models. They don't want to make good content that people actually want to share. They instead want to protect bad products. And so, you know, them and the people that they're paying are the ones that are pushing this bill. Whereas on the other side, you have, you know, internet activists like, you know, MoveOn, 6 million plus members who are all saying they don't want internet censorship. You got cybersecurity experts. You got the fathers of the internet, you know, like Ben Cerf and Tim Berners-Lee. You got venture capitalists. You got the Tea Party patriots even saying that this is really terrible. And so these are the people that are against this, whereas the people who are paying to make bad movies and paying people to protect their bad movies are the ones that are for it.
And you know, I mean, I think having spent some time in Hollywood myself, I think you're spot on. You know, when they have to go back to their shareholders or when they have to go back to their bosses and say, why did this movie underperform? The easiest thing in the world to say is piracy. Now, as far as I know, there's absolutely zero data to suggest that piracy is in any way hurting the business models of these companies in any significant way, or maybe in any way.
Absolutely, Sam. I mean, you want to know what the largest grossing year in terms of revenue for Hollywood was last year, 2011. The largest grossing year before 2011 was 2010. The largest grossing year before 2010 was 2009. This industry has no issues making money. So the fact that they're just inventing the straw man and piracy is really just, you know, a way that they can try to sneak through some legislation that they really want to break the internet as it was intended and designed.
Now, I imagine as the national campaign director for Move On, you have a pretty good sense of just sort of the way the way that legislation gets passed. And is it your sense that the senators and the congresspeople who co-sponsored this or came out in support, Do you have a sense that they really sort of understand what the mechanics of this are? Or was it simply, Chris Dodd called me, we get a lot of money from the lobbying groups that represent Hollywood, and nobody's going to care about this. The internet's just a series of tubes, and there's no reason to worry about this. It's not like anybody's going to pay attention to this. Is that your sense of what happened?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened is last summer, you know, a bunch of Hollywood lobbyists thought they could just sort of wave their wallets in front of a few senators and they could really get whatever they wanted. but the proof has been in the pudding, that the longer this bill has been out there, the more that people on the internet and activists in general have found out about this bill, the more they hate it and the more that they are reaching out to their elected officials. And so now the elected officials are hearing a different voice. They're not just hearing from the Hollywood lobbyists, you know, a former senators that represent Hollywood lobbyists, et cetera. They're not hearing from them. Now they're starting to hear from real people. And when they started hearing from more and more real people, their positions magically started to change. Every senator and every member of Congress who's flipped their position on this bill has said in their public statement that they heard from their constituents that this is the problem. I don't know if that's ever happened where everyone has been so consistent in saying that public pressure pushed them to change their position. I mean, this is really monumental.
Now, I may be a little cynical here, and I have no doubt that public pressure was a big part of it. But to a certain extent, aren't we also just watching a clash of sort of two industries here? I mean, you know, Google and, you know, outfits like Reddit and these outfits, these are no small shakes. I mean, we're seeing, and I imagine there's a lot of sort of Silicon Valley money out there, and I imagine there's a lot of sort of counter lobbying on a level that goes beyond the public. I mean, I have no doubt that the public is there, but are we seeing? Let me ask you this way: are we seeing a mobilization of public support that is greater than we normally see because of these companies' relationship with internet users? Is that the primary driving force, or is it also the combination of public mobility and the fact that we have another very powerful industry that is also pushing back?
I think the fact that companies like Google and Tumblr and Reddit have such a strong relationship with their members and can you know, help mobilize them is definitely something that's helping here. I mean, Tumblr in October drove 87,000 calls to Congress in one day about the House version of these internet censorship bills. So that is something that's really happening. But I think it's wrong to classify this as the technology industry versus the entertainment industry with a few people screaming in between. This is really about, you know, people who understand that the internet is the future. The internet is the future of job creation and of innovation in the United States. And regular people like me who use the internet every day to do all sorts of things understand that viscerally. And so we want to speak up about it. And I'm really happy to see that MoveOn.org is enabling its members to do that, that Reddit is enabling its users to do that, that Google has taken the unprecedented step to let people that go to its homepage be able to speak up. So, you know, I think that it is also, it's in Google's interest for the internet not to be broken, but it's also in my interest as an internet user for the internet not to be broken.
And do you think that we're going to see more activism like this from these sites? Or is this sort of one of those special occasions because this activism deals with the architecture of the internet rather than any issues that are sort of that flow through the tubes? This is about the tubes as opposed to the stuff that flows through it.
Well, the first occasion is always a special occasion. So this is something that I think will be historic and we'll remember. But I think as long as you have, you know, lobbyists trying to convince lawmakers that the internet needs to work in a fundamentally different way than it was designed and intended, there'll be an opportunity for companies and for internet users to speak out. And so, you know, this may be an unprecedented day in terms of the size and scale of the outrage and the outreach to Congress, but I have no doubt that there will be continued activism on this issue as long as the internet itself is threatened.
Garland Gilchrist, National Campaign Director of MoveOn.org, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sam. Happy to be here.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a moment. More on SOPA. Also on some of the government abuse of its online powers. Update on Occupy Wall Street. And great news coming out of Wisconsin. Oh, man. I'll tell you who you don't want to be last night. Scott Walker. He's on speed dial looking for that next job. More on the Arizona book banning. We'll be right back.
I hear you saying, why are laws a thing you can buy? They got paid off, should be laid off, free election denied. Our web means more than lawyers, lobbies, and lies. So speak up before the internet dies. Speak up before the internet dies.
We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Now, of course, you can go to, you can head over to Wikipedia, for instance, or MoveOn.org, or check out Wired. They've shut down. They've completely blacked out their site. Reddit is down today.
You have to credit Reddit. They really this is their thing. They started it.
Tumblr really did. I think Garland was right, but
yeah, Tumblr was the first, but Reddit started this day of action. Yeah,
Reddit was the straw, I think, that sort of like opened the dam, to mix metaphors. Really, what I'm saying is that Reddit was the crack in the camel's back that broke the camel's back. In anticipation of this blackout day, and this really is unprecedented, I don't think we're going to see much of this in the future unless it is specifically about the internet architecture. Because I just don't think this broad coalition of people, they are, this is really just about how the internet works. And we may see stuff like this in the future, but not that much. And there was plenty of occasion, frankly, to see some of this in the past. And it's a little bit disturbing we didn't see it. You know, early in January, there was a story out of Torrent Freak that in a leaked letter to Spain's outgoing president, the U.S. ambassador to the country warned that as punishment for Spain not passing a SOPA-like style file-sharing site blocking law, Spain risked being put out on a United States trade blacklist. There has been a lot of behind-the-scenes intimidation by the United States on behalf of NBC, Disney, Comcast, et cetera, et cetera. These outfits to use the United States as a way of whipping the rest of the world in line. And of course, this came from a WikiLeaks cable dump. 100 leaked cables showed that the U.S. had helped draft new Spanish copyright legislation and had heavily influenced the decisions of both the government and the opposition. It's really amazing. There was also a leaked memo that was put out by cybersecurity researcher Christopher Segoyan. I'm mispronouncing that. This is a couple of weeks ago, pointed to an internal memo of India's military intelligence. The memo suggests that in exchange for the Indian market presence of mobile device manufacturers, including RIM, Nokia, and Apple, they agreed to provide backdoor access on their devices. So, I mean, you see a lot of this happening. This type of sort of governments getting involved in this stuff, trying to mess with the infrastructure of the web. You know, it's smartphones, just functionally these networked utilities. And so you see the government abusing these powers. So even if this legislation was written in such a way that people felt protected in terms of safeguards, there's just not a lot of there's a lot of this stuff that happens. It's out of the limelight. And maybe the best thing that could come out of this, in addition to what appears to be at the very least a very large tactical retreat on this legislation, is that you have a more sensitized internet infrastructure to its power and its ability to mobilize people.
I mean, to try to understand that what these pro SOPA and pro PIPA people are like. I mean, there was an article in Tech Dirt last month. I think I showed it to you, where Daniel Castro, who's like one of the heads of trying to censor the internet for these groups, he put out a paper saying how he doesn't see why we can't do what essentially 13 other countries already do. And he didn't mention what those 13 other countries were. So Tech Dirt did the work and found that those 13 countries include China, Iran, Yemen, Syria, Uzbekistan, Saudi Arabia, Ethiopia. I mean, these are the countries he said, we should be just like them. What's the big deal? They do it. Right. Why can't we?
Right. I mean, they basically want technology that would essentially disable the technology that the State Department has helped propagate for dissidents in these countries. Just to give you a notion of the implications of this technology. So the MPAA came out with a statement. This is the Motion Picture Association of America. This is, I believe, the body that Chris Dodd now lobbies for. Chris Dodd, who I believe also said he wasn't going to become a lobbyist. But you're in Hollywood, you get to go to parties. This is a hilarious statement. Now, like I've said, on this program, we've been talking about SOPA since as early as early November. On every major network, cable and broadcast news, CNN had mentioned SOPA once. This past weekend, to his credit, Chris Hayes also did a segment on it. And so, I mean, I think, you know, one of the interesting things is that we have all of these media companies that are part of these lobbyist groups coming out of Hollywood who have provided zero information on this. You now have a functionally disabled internet today on purpose over legislation that was so unimportant, according to the mainstream media, they never, ever mentioned it. They were clearly engaged in a, if not a directed blackout, a de facto blackout. You're a producer of one of these shows. You know that NBC Comcast doesn't want you to deal with it. Your profile is such at that station that You're not sure you can get away with it. You just don't go there. And Chris Hayes, to his credit, is just simply not that type of guy. I think if they came to him and said, you can't do this, he'd say, I'm doing it anyways. He's also incredibly intelligent, which is why he brings on a lawyer from NBC to discuss it, because it's ostensibly giving them a platform. So with that backdrop and that knowledge of this near blackout of the corporate media on this legislation, they put out this statement in response to Wikipedia blacking out planned for today. It is an irresponsible response and a disservice to people who rely on them for information use their services. It is also an abuse of power, given the freedoms these companies enjoy in the marketplace today. It's an abuse of their power to inform their readers and their users and their clients that their service is in jeopardy because of what the corporate and mainstream media is doing. This is funny. It's a dangerous and troubling development when the platforms that serve as gateways to information intentionally skew the facts to incite their users in order to further their corporate interests. Let me translate what he's saying there. When he says it's a dangerous and troubling development, what he's saying is, oh, crap. We're not the gatekeepers to information anymore. This is a problem for us because one of the ways in which we've been able to operate is to make sure that we control all information and therefore can keep the vast majority of the public in the dark.
He goes on to say, when the platforms that serve as gateways to information intentionally skew the facts. Again, this sucks. We're supposed to be the gateways to information. And we're the ones who either intentionally skew the facts or simply just don't present them. I mean, that's the way. If you're classy, what you do is you just don't talk about it. To incite their users in order to further their corporate interests. What he's saying is to inform their users of the implications of this, to further their business model, which empowers their users to find out about these things when we don't want them to. He goes on to say, a so-called blackout is yet another gimmick, albeit a dangerous one. So what he's saying is here, forget about what I talked about in terms of the gravity of this situation, that they're blacking this out because it's just a gimmick. Although, don't forget that I say it's dangerous because I want to scare you. Designed to punish elected and administration officials. Punish? Punish? What is that? What does that even mean? I think what he's saying is that this whole accountability thing, that's not appropriate. That could spread. Who are working diligently to protect American jobs from foreign criminals. Or in other words, who are working diligently to protect shareholder profits and to cover the ass of executives who don't really know how to deal with the internet and are working on old business models and would rather blame someone else, like foreigners and criminals, for their incapacity to drive sales. Maybe I should try and get a job with these guys to translate all of their press releases. And then, of course, what I would do is I would never talk about this stuff, so that may not work out. We got to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Tina Dupuy, who is down in Washington, D.C., covering the Occupy Congress movement, actions that are taking place. Let's find out what happened last night. And still coming up, astonishing numbers from Wisconsin in the recall election petition. And just one more reason why Arizona is really, really just a horrible, backward-ass place. I'm sorry, Arizona. It's not my fault. It's your fault. We'll be right back. Last night there were skinheads on my lawn. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Take the skinheads bowling, take them bowling. Some people say that bowling alley's got big lanes. Got big lanes, got big lanes. Some people say that bowling alleys all look the same. But I forget what it was. What it was. What it was. Take the skinheads bowling. Take them bowling. Take the skinheads bowling. Take them bowling. Had a dream last night about you, my friend. Had a dream I wanted to sleep next to plastic. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It's always a pleasure to welcome to the program Tina Dupuy, managing editor of Crooks and Liars, constantly trying to push out John Amato. right? Am I right? I mean, Amato goes around he's with his Yankee-loving I think he's also
It's already gotten personal. It's 2 seconds into the interview. It's already gotten personal.
Well, I'm just reporting the facts. I mean, let's be honest.
I said just between you and me, Sam. I said something bad about the Yankees. He didn't talk to me for like 48 hours.
Yeah,
that guy was too livid to even have a conversation with me. So
yeah, that guy rules that that site with an iron fist. Okay, so you're down in Washington, D.C. We were talking to Jeff Smith from Occupy Wall Street, who's also down in D.C., engaging, covering the Occupy Congress actions. What have you seen over the past 24 hours?
A lot of mud. I've been covering this for The Atlantic, and my editor over there said that I should probably get some what you people call on the East Coast duck boots, which we do not wear in Los Angeles for any reason. We just stay home. But yesterday there was about 2,000 roughly occupiers that met on the lawn of the Capitol, which is far from a radical event. You had like a GA with, three or four different groups that broke up that were talking about, what they wanted to see in the movement and what it meant to them and what was at stake and, the stuff that we've been hearing for the past 4 months. This was the 4 month anniversary of occupying Zuccotti Park on the 17th. Then everyone kind of, went to their congressional office. It looks kind of rowdy from the steps of the Rayburn Building where representatives have their offices. So you had people who were, they're wearing anarchist masks and Guy Fawkes masks and, chanting and yelling. And so you had some people walking out of the building, that looked kind of, let's say, intimidated by the crowd. But then everyone stood in line very patiently to go through security to then, be rather not disruptive in offices. They just kind of went in there as like straight concerned citizens talking to their representatives, hoping to find their representatives in their office. A lot of them talked to staffers about, how their parents will not be able to ever retire and will have to work till they die and can't afford health insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All the stuff that is the reason why there have been these breakout movements across the nation.
Now, my understanding was that at first they were not being allowed, Occupy members were just simply not being allowed to go visit their Congress people's office. Did you see any of that?
I did not see any of that. I saw people standing in line like any other person would, and it was just a lot slower, but they absolutely let everybody in. I was there. I went through, just like everyone else did, and I did not hear those reports, and I didn't see that. So
my understanding is that there was a lot of Congress people who also were just not there. Nobody knew where they were or something. Some of them were hiding.
Yeah, it sounds apropos of the 112th, doesn't it? They're not really into working. Well, it was an odd day to pick it. I think the date was a bit arbitrary because of the anniversary, the fourth anniversary, if you want to call it that, of Zuccotti Park. So the 17th was kind of a weird day in the first place because the Senate wasn't in session. The Congress was kind of half back, and they also went to the Rayburn Building at 4 o'clock, which, for this Congress seems like,
4 o'clock, you're already out on the golf links or having a couple of drinks.
Exactly. They're already in a bar by that time.
You sent me pics of what seemed like quite a few people on the steps of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. That was not overly planned. And that's something that you'll hear again and again and again when it comes to Occupy. I've been to 8 of these occupations. I've been covering it from day one. And a lot of the times their victories are purely by accident. One example of that is that Zuccotti Park was fifth on their list to actually occupy in New York, and it was the only one that they could have stayed at over 24 hours without being kicked out because of the private public ownership of Zuccotti Park. So it kind of happened by accident that it became this huge symbol that resonated across the nation. So in the same way, there was a march past the Senate, past the Supreme Court, and then onto the White House, and there were only maybe a handful of of Capitol Police at the Supreme Court. As you know, it is illegal to have any kind of protest signs or to stand on the steps of the Supreme Court building. Lots of people, it's a real easy arrest as far as civil disobedience goes. You can just walk over there and have a sign that says, you know, I disagree with whatever, and you can get arrested almost instantly. Cornel West did this a couple months ago in solidarity with the Occupy movement. And instead of anyone getting arrested in a mass demonstration, everyone just stormed the steps. They were there for only a couple of minutes. There were some people who I would describe as, you know, the professional left people who were, you know, staffers, former staffers that I was near on the steps, and they were aghast that we were able to stay there and people were able to do this mass protest. It was unprecedented, according to them, and I think that checks out. And it was amazing. And then instead of knowing that that was a big deal, someone said, you know, let's go on to the White House, which is not unprecedented. It happens every day. And so they just marched down Pennsylvania Avenue after a couple of minutes of taking the Supreme Court steps.
You know, it's interesting. Like, I don't know if it's by accident. I mean, I guess it is to a certain extent. But, I mean, one of the amazing things about this movement is that it keeps pressing and pressing until it finds essentially some crack, some crevice that it can exploit and open up and seep into. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, and that, I think, is sort of ultimately one of its incredible strengths. Let me ask you, have you heard about anything in terms of, like, are people networking here? Are they planning for the future? Is any of that sort of organizing going on?
That was the initial plan, that they were to have FaceTime with people who they have met on the internet or followed on Twitter or whatever. And they were, you know, it was a huge, they're all, you know, now having a big powwow. There's, you know, roughly 2,000 of them, you know, networking. And they said that that absolutely was. But I just want to speak to, you know, some their victories. I did I followed the Yes Men. I don't know if you're familiar, right, Sam? The guys who do these kind of
cultural jamming. Very familiar, of course. Right. I've been interviewing the Yes Men for years, Tina.
Okay.
You must know.
Okay, come on. I'm a huge fanboy. I can barely stand it when I talk to them, but it's horribly.
Oh, I thought you meant a fanboy.
But I talk you. Oh well, that's
all right. That's fine.
Let me get this off air first. But I asked them about, you know, they pull up these brilliant pranks once they got GE to admit that they were not going to give their tax break back to the U.S. government. It's brilliant. Anyway, I asked them about these pranks that are pretty elaborate and risky and could very likely fail, what their ratio is from failure to success. And they said about 50-50, which means that half of the pranks that they spend months planning completely don't come off, and they don't, and no one hears about them, and they just, it's a waste of time, energy, and money, and it goes away. No one ever hears about it. And then they do, and then the next prank that they do, you know, is amazing, makes headlines, and we all get a good laugh at, you know, GE. So with Occupy, they're, you know, they have some of the same kind of ratio, like, well, you,
right,
where you have these kind of spectacular successes, like taking Zuccotti Park, like these different demonstrations, and then you have things like Occupy the Rose Parade, which I would not say was successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is actually indicative, I think, of any movement, frankly.
Yes.
I mean, including the civil rights movement. You know, some actions
absolutely
catch fire, some don't. It is an ongoing process, and the parts of it that grow the movement, even in failure or less success in terms of the specific actions, you know, they end up affecting future ones. And I think, you know, I've said for a long time that, you know, all of this is simply is prelude to what happens in the spring. But Tina Dupuy, thank you so much. We're out of time. Thanks for updating us. Good luck.
Always good to talk to you, Sam.
Oh, Tina, it's always good to talk to you, too. All right, talk to you soon. Bye. Folks, join me in the in the after show, the better half of the program today, and I will talk about the Scott Walker recall signatures and Arizona. I got a tweet. I got a text from Cliff Schechter during that last night. He said, do not mess. Well, he didn't say mess, but he said, do not mess with the Yankees while on air, or I'll have to figure out how to call in. The number is 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920. We'll be taking calls in just a moment. You can insult Amato all you want, but do not F with the Yankees or the Giants, says Cliff. The Giants and the Pats could meet in the Super Bowl. I doubt it. I don't think the Giants are going to last that long. But we'll be talking to Cliff this Friday, as always. Folks, we need your membership. It is the only way which we support this program. And, you know, it is – you see it in the context of the value that you get. We talk about SOPA 2 months ago. We talk about it despite the fact that you do not hear it on MSNBC or on NBC or on CNN or any of the other outlets that you watch on the corporate media. Yet you pay probably tens of dollars a month in your cable bills. You see it in the context of coverage of Occupy. I'm holding in my hands right now a picture of a general strike poster, May 1st, New York City, that apparently is starting to pop up in Brooklyn. I will read the statement that's been released by those people who are putting this out, but it's coming, folks. It's coming. And, you know, we were talking earlier in the year, last year, about the movement that is afoot online, that we saw with Anonymous, that we saw with WikiLeaks, that we saw with Lulzsec, and the growing anti-establishment feeling that showed itself in Wisconsin, and then in the Arab Spring, and in Los Indignados, and in the protests in Israel, and then the growing protests in this country, UK Uncut. So things are happening, folks, and independent media is an important part in giving you and keeping you updated on this stuff, because at the end of the day, it is not in the establishment's best interest that you are aware of these things and the depth of these things and the fact that there's more to the story than, hey, there's some people down there who don't even shave.
And remember that all the major news organizations are for SOPA and PIPA.
Of course. And so it is your support that keeps us alive. And if you enjoy the program and you listen to it on a daily basis, and if you've been listening to it for months on a daily basis, or three times a week or one time a week, it is fairly small price to pay, but every membership is what keeps us alive. So your support is not only welcome but and appreciated, but incredibly, incredibly important to, well, it's really the only thing that keeps us going. So meet me in the after show. You can IM me at Majority FM. You can call at 646-257-3920 or Skype us at Majority Live. You can also help the show out by giving us a good rating on iTunes. If you buy crap through Amazon, buy it through our link. Go to majority.fm, support the show, click on that, click on the Amazon link, bookmark it. If you buy crap through them, you might as well give us a kickback. I'm not going to be able to put braces on Myla from Amazon, but then along came Sopa Pipa. I mean, maybe I can just buy her funny pair of glasses so that people don't, focus on her smile too much. A new toothbrush. That won't help with the braces. And, of course, you can support JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate, organic if you want organic. 10% coupon code Majority. And it's a great company. Tomorrow I will be in Washington, D.C. We'll have some of that content, and Friday I'll be down there too at the Families USA Healthcare Conference. Believe me, I know. We'll be in the, I'll see you in the better half of the program.
Can you write a decent law? Do you care about copyright at all? Or just win back your seat? Content will begin to ebb. You'll watch the slow death of the web, and you'll be left with nothing more to tweet. Well, I know it's looking pretty grim, 'cause they'll tear our culture limb from limb. There's too much damn support. Oh, this law we must abort. Oh, we can't let lobbies run amok with our series of tubes and that big dumb truck. And I know some folks who want to give the day the law cast eyes.